compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we're back. One little video or audio, rather, left to play for you. And then we'll proceed to the phone calls, 888-914-9149. You've heard me say before that one of the difficulties we face nowadays is the moving of the goalposts and conflicting information and contradictory information. I'm all in favor. Let's follow the science. Let's pay attention to what the science and the doctors are telling us. The media has a hand in this misinformation and at times just simple disinformation campaign. And I have a little example of this. This is from just mainstream network media in Australia, kind of a then versus now. These are people on Australian television either quoting the experts or as experts themselves talking about, well, listen to this. You'll hear a then versus now example.
Beaches and packed parks might seem like a COVID risk. There hasn't been a single case of outdoor transmission since the pandemic began.
But when you look at the science, there has not been one case in New South Wales, even Australia, where someone has caught the virus outdoors.
The fresh air disperses and dilutes virus particles, making it very difficult to transmit with any strength. And the liquid droplets that carry COVID evaporate in the outdoors.
That's why, regardless of the fears, there was no transmission from Black Lives Matter protests in Australia.
Okay. So this is from, you know, montage from the last few months. And of course, when the Black Lives Matter protests were at their height last year, there was a concern. What about all these people cheek by jowl in the streets, not wearing masks, breathing the same air, but they're outdoors. Are they going to be spreading the virus? And as you heard the experts and tech experts say just now, not a single case of it.
Nothing
so
to
that
worry
was then,
about.
Nothing to worry about. That's right. That was then. This is now. Listen.
A few moments later.
Thousands of lockdown protesters refusing to wear masks have been condemned this afternoon.
Police now fear it will become a Delta super spreader event. This premier calling the protesters' behaviour utterly disgusting.
Strike force seasoned, which will see 22 detectives work from now until whenever it concludes, identifying as many people as possible who attended today's incident and have them charged.
The range of penalties, it may well be more significant than a $1,000 fine.
There is no doubt their voices were heard, but underlying the noise and anger, an irony that this potential super spreader on Freedom Day would only serve to increase their term of imprisonment.
Their term of imprisonment. Did you get that? I mean, this is the same general group of people who were merrily singing the praises of the Black Lives Matter protest because they can't get it. They can't spread it because it's outdoors and the droplets disperse and they evaporate, all this blah, 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 blah. And now, if you've been following the news, you know that in the past several days in Australia, there have been massive outdoor demonstrations by largely conservative people, it seems to me, who are protesting these draconian measures that are taking place in Australia, not to mention the rest of the world, mask mandates and other things like that. Whether you agree with them or disagree with them, look what's going on here. When you've got hundreds of thousands of Australian citizens out in the streets protesting, and because they're conservative, that's a super spreading event. Those people are going to be identified. We're going to get police on overtime to find out who those people are because they're going to have to go to prison. Super spreader. But just a few months ago, the same people, the same talking heads on Australian media were saying something very different. Follow the science, they said. Follow the science. I can't even do an Australian accent. But it was the same kind of thing. But in this case, it was a Black Lives Matter, very hard left, extremist left wing demonstration. And in that case, the same kind of activity, the same situation. And those people were practically threw a party for them. And ain't no way that anybody's going to be able to catch COVID from that. Come on, guys. That's not science. Science says that the virus evaporates in the air. They're safe, not a super spreader event, nothing to see here. Keep moving.
Science!
You see, Cyrus, you see what I'm saying, right?
Come on, man.
Yes. You see what I'm saying, though?
I do see what you're saying. Yep.
Let me hear that again. I like that. Give me a little
more. Come on,
man. Yeah. Let's go to the phones. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Mike in Chicago. Oh, I'm sorry. Mike, forgive me. You know what? Stand by. I'm going to come to you first, Mike. Welcome, Mike.
Hi, how are you? I just want to say one thing. You mentioned that the only difference between the old Latin Mass and the new Mass of 1969 is the externals, and that's not true.
I didn't say the only difference, but I talked about how the Mass is the Mass is the Mass, regardless of the externals. Yeah, I did talk about that.
Right. I agree that the Masses are both valid, but at the same time, the difference of the Mass is so much different in terms of the form of the Mass in the old Mass. It's more the prayers are explicitly, like they have explicit reference to Catholic doctrine, where the new Mass is a little more ambiguous, a lot more ambiguous when it comes to like sacrifice and stuff like that. That's what I wanted to say, because I thought you said that the only difference was the externals, like the bells and whistles, that type of thing.
Well, it depends on how you mean externals. Maybe you and I are talking about the same thing, but in two different ways. By way of externals, I'm talking about the prayers themselves. That could be understood in that regard. And I'll give you an example. At the Last Supper, Jesus did not use any of those prayers in the precise theological
book.
Because the traditional Latin Mass was not in existence at that point, Mike. Come on, that's an easy one. Let me answer your question. The precise theological prayers that you and I both love about the traditional Mass are the byproduct of many centuries of prayer and reflection on the part of the Church. So those did not exist at the time of the Last Supper. So my point is, maybe it's an underlying issue here, but that is that even though the first Mass that was ever celebrated in the Last Supper did not have those prayers that are beautiful and very theologically precise, it doesn't affect the fact that it's still the Mass. That's the point I was getting at.
I agree that both Masses are valid. But I mean, going back to the Last Supper, how do we know that some of the prayers of the Mass I know they didn't speak Latin, but how do you know the form of the Mass is not very similar to the form of the Mass that we see now in the Latin Mass?
How we know, because we have the documents from the early church at the beginning of the second century and forward. So let's take the Didache, for example. And we have descriptions of the Mass and the writings about the Mass by the early church fathers in some cases. And none of those things have the form of the traditional Latin Mass as it was promulgated by Pope Pius V. It didn't exist in that form at that time. Now, elements...
But didn't it organically grow?
It did indeed. Now, elements of the Mass that you would see today are certainly found there. The sign of peace, for example, in some of the prayers, the Roman canon derives from the ancient times. But at the Last Supper in the upper room, those prayers were not prayed by Jesus. In fact, we have a great deal of what he said at the Last Supper in the Holy Bible.
Okay. One more question, one more thought, though.
Okay.
The heresies that grew up around the church around the centuries, the prayers grew up as a result of the heresies, don't you think? That's why they organically grew into the Mass?
Well, the church's defense against the heresies certainly influenced the way in which the people prayed. That's true.
Right.
So, for example, against the Arians, you had the church's continuing emphasis on the true divinity of Jesus, as an example.
Okay. All right.
I'm not really sure what we're arguing about, though, Mike, because, I mean, it seems pretty self-evident that you mentioned the prayers in the traditional Latin Mass. All I'm saying is that those were not present at the Last Supper. Therefore, I don't see what your argument is, or what are we arguing about?
Well, that we need them.
Well, did Jesus need them at the Last Supper?
Were the heresies around at the time?
That's a simple question. Did Jesus need those prayers at the Last Supper? Did the apostles need those prayers in the years after Jesus ascended to the Father?
Probably not at that point, but now we do. Right. Well, look at all the ambiguity in the new Mass. Even the word sacrifice is ambiguous in the new Mass.
No, it's not. Not anymore. That was true before the revision under Pope Benedict XVI, about 10 years ago, whatever it was. And those terms were reintroduced into the vernacular versions when the liturgical books changed. I will grant you, Mike, that it was much more ambiguous before that. But since that revision of the liturgical books, it's far more precise than it was before, thankfully.
Okay. Well, one question, though. Why do we make it so ambiguous right after when Paul VI changed that? I'm not.
What do you mean, why do we make it ambiguous?
Why
did the council?
Bonini, the guy who made it, the guy who invented it,
yeah.
Bonini.
I mean, I don't know if... Is this cat and mouse? I mean, I'm very familiar with the history, so if you have a point you want to make, feel free to make it.
Well, why do we make it ambiguous to begin with after 69?
Well, if you know who Annibale Bonini is, then you would know the answer to that. His desire was to make the Mass more acceptable to Protestants. You know that.
Right, that's what I thought.
So why are you asking me that question? You already know the answer to it.
Because I'm trying to bring up a point.
Okay. What's the point?
The point is the Latin Mass is a lot more, I think the Latin Mass, old Latin Mass is a lot more superior to the new Mass.
So do I.
Okay. I guess we're not arguing anything.
I guess not. I prefer the traditional Latin Mass, but I don't go to it very often. My wife and I, just so you know where I'm coming from, Mike, my wife and I have always been registered our whole lives at a, well, our whole married lives, 40 plus years now, at a Novus Ordo parish, if you want to use that term, in union with our bishop, where the new rite of the Mass is celebrated in the vernacular. But it hasn't for a moment diminished my love and esteem for the traditional Latin Mass. I recognize that the new rite of the Mass is, as you said, valid. And yeah, there are some externals and other aspects of it that I wish were improved, but that's the church's job, not mine. I just need to be a faithful Catholic.
Well, my whole point with calling was just, I thought you said the externals were the only difference. That's what was my point.
All right. Well, are we sorted out better now?
I guess so.
All right. Well, I'm glad you called,
Thank
Mike. You. You're welcome. Good to talk to you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Josephine in Torrance, California. Hi, Josephine.
Hi, Patrick. I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out how am I to live a Christian life in this world that I'm living in now. America seems to be changing. God gives us a free will. God mm-hmm. tells us to love one another. I hear Gavin Newsom, and it seems like he's not giving people choice. And in fact, mm-hmm. trying to stir up people against each other.
Yeah, I'm sure there is some of that going on. But remember what Jesus said. He said, in the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. So if you're close to Jesus, Josephine, if you love him, if you're on that rock on which he's building his church, he promised that the winds and the rain and the floods would beat against the house that's built on that rock. So we know that those storms are going to be there. But he said, if you're on that rock, you're going to be fine, come what may. So don't allow it. Don't let that allow you to become morose or to become defeated or worse yet, to fall into despair. This is a great time to be Catholic. This is a great time to be a follower of Jesus. I mean, one of the best times ever to be a follower of Jesus, because we have a calling to speak the truth in love and to help other people and to shine the light that Jesus says, let your light shine before others. I mean, I really do believe if you focus on that and if you keep your eyes fixed on Jesus, as I know you do, I'm not suggesting otherwise, but if you really focus on that, these other things, they come and go, they pass. And eventually we're headed to heaven, right?
Yes, that's got to be our goal.
Yeah.
That has to be our goal.
You know what I like? Okay. Jesus himself says, listen to this. He says in Luke chapter 21, verse 28, he says, now when these things begin to take place, look up and raise your heads because your redemption is drawing near. You notice that? He doesn't say, go hide in the basement. he doesn't say, look for, a rock to hide behind. He says, look up, raise your head, because your redemption is near. I think we have to look at it that way.
Okay.
I know.
Right.
I know it can be easier said than done. I know. But it can be done.
I know. We have to be strong.
Yes. And you will be.
Try and do my best.
I know you will. I know you will. You pray the rosary every day, I'm sure, don't you?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
That's good. And that's such a powerful weapon. And you know that Our Lady has promised great graces to those who pray the rosary. And you're right where you need to be. You're right where the Lord wants you to be. And come what may, if you're close to Him, close to Our Lady, it's going to be okay.
Okay. I'm trying to, build that relationship and make it stronger so that I can wither anything.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it's not you and I who will weather it. It'll be Jesus, our protection.
That's true. Yeah. How can we've got God on our side.
Yeah, it's so true. That is so true. Well, hang in there.
Thank you,
and
Patrick.
Keep listening to the Relevant Radio. Okay, we're here to help you. We're here to give you that encouragement that everyone's looking for.
Oh, it does. It does. It gives me great peace to listen to your show.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad. Well, we're here for you, Josephine, and you can count on us. Keep praying for us, too, as well. We'll certainly pray for you. Let's see. Thank you for the call. I think we're, there we go. We're out of time. So time out, quick time out, and then we'll come back with more of your phone calls. 888-914-9149. When we come back, I want to tell you the story of some religious sisters, some Carmelite nuns who went through some very, very dark times around the time of the French Revolution. And I want to tell you how they handled what they went through when we come back. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. Just as a reminder, you were listening to that last caller. Relevant Radio is about hope and encouragement. So if you know somebody who feels angry or despondent or people who are fearful because they're listening to the news and all they're getting is that side of the story, tell them about Relevant Radio. Tell them about this program in particular because we do the opposite. We don't incite anger here. We don't play into the fear and all the things that you see into the media. We're trying to look at the bigger picture here and keep our eyes focused on Christ. And as a Catholic radio station, our focus is on the hope that we have. And there's a great deal of hope around us. We just have to know where to look for it. So that's a big part of what I try to do here, especially if we have to talk about some of these issues in the news. It's for a purpose. It's so that you'll see the bigger picture and not fall prey to the fear and the anxiety that many people do fall into. Now, I want to share with you now a story, and this is a true story. This is about the Carmelites of Compiègne in France, and this took place at the time of the French Revolution. So this is an article that appeared recently in the Register, the National Catholic Register by Stephanie Mann. I just want to share it with you because I think it plays directly into our need for hope and encouragement. And listen to what they went through. This was during the Reign of Terror and the campaign to destroy Catholicism in France. Now, if you think things are bad in these United States, think again, because it was far, far, far worse than in France, especially for Catholics. And the sisters in question, these Carmelite sisters, they were in a convent, they're Carmel, that had been closed in 1792 as part of the revolutionary reforms of the Catholic Church. Contemplative orders of monks and nuns were considered useless and selfish. Now, this was by the government, of course. Anyone who had not taken final vows was not permitted to take final vows. Some of the active religious orders were allowed to function in society, but priests were considered employees of the state. Priests who refused to take the oath to the civil constitution to the clergy went underground to continue their ministry, and if they were arrested, they were found guilty of betraying the revolution and executed. The revolutionary government followed up on the dispersed Carmelite sisters in Compiègne and found 16 of them still observing their religious life of prayer. On June 22, 1792, they were arrested and imprisoned in a former visitation convent where they lived in community until they were taken to prison in Paris. While they were in the visitation convent, they met several English Benedictine nuns who had also been arrested and were awaiting trial. These Benedictines were already in exile from England, where Catholics were not free to follow God's call to a religious vocation. Henry VIII had suppressed all the religious orders in 1540. Helen More, the great-great-granddaughter of St. Thomas More, was one of the first postulants in the Benedictine house in Cambrai. Her father, Cesare More, the great-grandson of St. John More and St. Thomas More's only son, donated funds and dowries to the foundation of Our Lady of Consolation, and her sister Bridget joined the order too. Generations of English girls had endured exile to observe St. Benedict's rule. The Benedictines and the Carmelites shared the journey to Paris, but the Benedictines would be exiled again, back to England, where they built a new abbey in Worcestershire. The Carmelites were not allowed to wear their habits and thus were wearing secular clothing. This detail would matter to the English Benedictines in the near future. The Carmelites, as one of them had told the Benedictines, had been making a daily act of consecration for themselves, for peace in France, and for all those innocents caught up in the Reign of Terror. As Charles Dickens accurately portrayed in the last pages of A Tale of Two Cities, both aristocrats and poor men and women, like the anonymous seamstress, were being accused of imaginary conspiracies against the revolution. They were being dragged to court and summarily sentenced to death. The standard was trial and execution within 24 hours, so there was no time for justice. In Paris, the Carmelite sisters were imprisoned in the former royal palace that contains King St. Louis' Saint-Chapelle, built as a reliquary for the Crown of Thorns. They were given permission to wash their secular clothing and thus went to trial and to their executions wearing garments much like their habits while the other clothes dried. They were also able to celebrate their order's great feast, Our Lady of Mount Carmel, on July 16th. Their trial, held in a crowded courtroom with other defendants, was quick. Accused of hiding arms for counter-revolutionary forces, the prioress held up a crucifix proclaiming it contained the only arms they had ever kept. Authorities had found an altar cloth decorated with a fleur-de-lis, so they were accused of supporting Louis XVI and the monarchy. One of the nuns answered that, quote, "If that is a crime, we are all guilty of it. You can never tear out of our hearts the attachment for Louis XVI and his family. Your laws cannot prohibit feeling. They cannot extend their empire to the affections of the soul. God alone has the right to judge them." Finally, one of the nuns asked the judge what he meant when he charged them with fanaticism. He replied, "I mean your attachment to your childish beliefs and your silly religious practices." The Carmelites rejoiced that they could be found guilty of being true Catholics. Their conduct at the guillotine, which had been moved from what is now Place de la Concorde to what is now Place de la Nation, too much blood had accumulated on the former site, is the stuff of legend and of operatic drama. And she refers here to a play called Dialogues of the Carmelites, based on a play by George Bernanos, based on a novel. Loaded into the tumbril and driven through the streets of Paris, they chanted the Have Mercy on Us, O Lord, the Salve Regina, and the Te Deum. Even the most hardened atheistic revolutionary would have recognized these chants of the church. When they arrived at the Place de la Nation, they sang the Veni Creator Spiritus, invoking the Holy Spirit. Each of the choir nuns passed at the foot of the scaffold and renewed their vows to the prioress, Mother Teresa of St. Augustine, as they began to chant Laudate Dominum Omnes Gentes. They each kissed a small statue of the Blessed Virgin Mary and mounted the scaffold, starting with the youngest, Sister Constance, who had made her final vows just before she died. Mother Teresa of St. Augustine, Mother St. Louis, Mother Henriette, Sister Mary of Jesus Crucified, Sister Charlotte of the Resurrection, Sister Euphrasia of the Immaculate Conception, Sister Teresa of the Sacred Heart of Mary, Sister Julie Louise of Jesus, Sister Teresa of St. Ignatius, Sister Mary Henrietta of Providence, and Sister Constance. Also, three lay sisters who helped the choir nuns with chores and hospitality, and two externs who had been the nuns' contacts with the outside world also suffered martyrdom. Sister St. Martha, Sister Mary of the Holy Spirit, Sister St. Francis Xavier, Catherine Soiron, and Therese Soiron. The chant ended when the prioress was guillotined. Their bodies were loaded into a cart and hauled off to the cemetery where they were dumped into a mass grave. Now, it goes a little further here, and it talks about those English Benedictines, those sisters that the French Carmelites had known before their execution. They were finally exiled in May of 1795 and returned to England wearing the secular clothing the Carmelites had laundered before their trial and execution. Although there had been some relief, as the Parliamentary Act of 1791 termed it, the penal laws against Catholics still remained in force in England, and Catholics were not completely free to practice their faith openly. Nevertheless, the Catholic exiles from France, both the priests and the religious sisters and monks, were welcomed home to England. The Benedictines opened their new abbey, but still thought of the Carmelites of Compiègne. They regarded the clothing the Carmelites had worn during their imprisonment as relics of martyrs, and certainly they were. They began to think of how the Carmelites' consecration and martyrdom had contributed to the end of the Reign of Terror in France. 10 days after the Carmelites were beheaded, Maximilian Robespierre and his Committee of Public Safety fell from power. Nevertheless, the anti-Catholic spirit remained, and the new government, the Directory, still regarded the Church as the enemy of the Revolution. Not until the First Consul Napoleon Bonaparte and Pope Pius VII signed the Concordat in July of 1801 would relations between the Church and the French government become more peaceful. The revolutionary calendar that suppressed all feast days and Sundays was finally replaced by the Gregorian calendar in 1806. And the Feast of the Carmelites is also celebrated on the Church's festival of the calendar. And it includes this prayer: Lord God, you called Blessed Teresa of St. Augustine and her companions to go on in the strength of the Holy Spirit from the heights of Carmel to receive a martyr's crown. May our love, too, be so steadfast that it will bring us to the everlasting vision of your glory. We ask this through our Lord Jesus Christ, your Son, who lives and reigns with you in the Holy Spirit, one God, forever and ever. Amen. And we'll have a link to this story for you. It's fascinating and beautiful, and I find it very edifying and very appropriate. If you find that you're having a difficult time, just remember some of the great men and women who went before us, who rose to those heights of heroism, and in their case, received the crown of martyrdom. 888-914-9149. Back to the phones. Let's go to Steve now in Roseville, California. Hi, Steve.
Thanks. You can hear me, right?
I can, yeah.
Okay, yeah, great. I have a question, but, you know, sitting here on the phone waiting, I have a few comments that I may make real quickly. The man who started the mask movement in America did so with a phone call to KGO Radio right after Gavin Newsom told us not to wear masks and just to socially distance back in March of 2020. The man was okay. Me. I said, even if they don't work completely, they're going to double your protection. I've worn a mask for 14 months. I've never gotten COVID, so I haven't changed anything else about my lifestyle. So they must work. Now, I have a question, but I think the answer everyone should know is get rid of bad news Newsom. How do we defend our right not to be ordered to vaccinate?
Well, you have a recall election coming up, and that's the mechanism that's in place legally for people to recall a governor that they no longer have confidence in. I think that's the legal means of doing that.
I agree. We got to get rid of bad news Newsom. Now, let me say one more thing, if I may. The man who started the mask movement drives that van everyone's seen in California.
Yeah. All right, Steve. I'm not sure where this is going. Did you have a question that you wanted to ask me? I guess not. Okay. Well, hey, Steve, great talking to you. I appreciate that. Stay safe. Let's go to Peggy now in Chicago. Hi, Peggy.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've been trying to figure out how to find out what truth is because I feel like with Revelation when they were saying that the mark of the beast and stuff, and I would say, well, who would deliberately go get a tattoo or something like that? Like you said, hypothetically, maybe China might say it's easier if you get this mark instead of carrying these papers around.
Mm-hmm.
And the article that I read from naturalnews.com, July 20th, by Mike Adams, it's talking about, it's saying that the technology exists and is feasible and that has been being developed over the past two decades for self-assembled magnetic natal systems. And what they're saying is that...
Wait, I missed that. Self-assembly magnetic what
system? It's called, it's real, Science Paper Documents, Self-Assembled Magnetic Natal Systems.
Nail systems.
Nail circuitry.
I apologize. I do not understand what that means.
Yeah. It's a very complicated thing, but they're talking about how it's this technology has been developed so that it's possible to inject in the form of a vaccine instructions that inside the body it uses our body's blood, the iron and the oxygen atoms in it, to assemble a microchip.
Yeah, Peggy, I don't know the first thing about that. I'm not sure what to tell you. So beyond that, was there anything else that you wanted to ask or
mention? Well, what I'm trying to say is, how do we figure out what's true or what's not true when we're reading things? You know, it's like, I don't know if things have been, you know, researched by other people. And
right. I can help you with that.
If our soul is dependent, you know, like, I don't want to be part of the with the sheep and the goats being separated. And I just worry with this vaccine that, you know, it's possible for them. They have technology where they can inject things through.
All right. Let me jump in here. Matthew chapter 25, Peggy, where Jesus talks about the sheep and the goats. He doesn't mention vaccines. He doesn't mention microchips or anything like that. He mentions, did you take care of the people who were hungry and thirsty and sick and imprisoned, etc.? If you did, you're among the sheep. If you didn't, you're among the goats. So you will not be separated in one group or the other on the basis of what you read about vaccines. That has no bearing on it. But I can help you. You said, how do you know what is true and not true? I would refer you, first of all, to the National Catholic Bioethics Center, their website. If you have a pen handy, jot this down. It's ncbcenter.org. They have a clearinghouse of information on not just, so for example, the morality of vaccines and such, but also the content of the vaccines. What is actually in them? What are the chemicals that you will find in a given vaccine, and not just for COVID-19? And so if you really want to know from a bona fide source that is not pushing an agenda or trying to sell herbal products or anything like that, start there. Now, they can also refer you to other bona fide, legitimate medical websites that can do the same thing for you if you want to go in that direction. But there are clearinghouses of information that are available that will give you the information you're looking for. The difficulty, it seems to me, Peggy, is that there are other organizations out there that are, whether intentionally or otherwise, are promoting things and theories that are simply not true. Now, I'm not in a position to adjudicate who's who. That's why I can say, in the case of an organization that I know is on the up and up, I know that they are not scamming people, and that would be the National Catholic Bioethics Center, I would say start there, and I think that will help to balance maybe some of the things that you're reading in these other questionable publications that I'm not familiar with, so I can't pronounce on them. That'd be my best advice, Peggy. I hope that's helpful to you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Ruth now in Naperville, Illinois. Hi, Ruth. Hello, Ruth. You're on the air. Okay.
Bueller.
One more time.
I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Good. Right. Welcome.
Actually, you made a comment about what I was calling about. As soon as you started this second segment, I was calling to say that I think, in my opinion, that you are inciting anger over this COVID situation by telling people a lot of negative things. I don't think that...
What's wrong with that? What's wrong with telling people things that are going on in the world?
Because I don't think it's your responsibility as a Catholic radio host to talk about those things.
Why not?
Well, because it's up to the news to let people know about that.
Well, wait a minute. Hang on a second, Ruth. Is it your responsibility to tell me what I can talk about on my radio program? Is that your responsibility?
Of course not. I'm just giving you my opinion. That's all.
Giving my opinion to the people who are listening. Why can you give me your opinion, but I can't give my opinion? How does that work?
Well, my opinion has nothing to do with what you're talking about. I'm talking about your negative things that you're saying on the radio.
So you can say that on the radio, but I can't say what I want to say on the radio? How does that work?
You can say whatever you want to say, Patrick. I'm just telling you my opinion. You don't have to listen to me. That's all.
Well, I'm happy to listen to you.
But I wanted to give you my opinion because it bothers me, and I wanted to let you know. Not that you care, but it makes me...
Oh, I care. I care enough to talk to you, Ruth. Believe me, I care. We may not agree, but I can still care. So what is it you object to exactly? I want to make sure I understand the complaint.
I object to you telling the people that certain governors say this about the vaccine and just negative things. I can't remember all of them, but negative things.
Why is that a problem, though? Why is that a problem?
Because I don't think it's your place. It's not...
Why is it not my place? I have a radio program that's designed to talk about current events. So how is that not my place?
Designed to talk about what?
Current events.
I didn't know that relevant radio was designed to talk about current events. I thought it was
this program is
a radio station.
Yeah, are Catholics not allowed to talk about current events?
Absolutely they are. Absolutely.
But not me? Am I not allowed to talk about them?
I disagree with you. No, I don't think you should.
Based
you're
on
allowed.
What?
I can't tell you not. Based on my opinion, that's all.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome, Ruth. I'm still not sure how that works, but okay. Thank you, Ruth. I appreciate it. And if nothing else, thank you for listening. I do appreciate that too. We'll take a break and we will come right back with more of my opinions on current events. Ready, steady, go. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Real life solutions you can believe in. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Is it okay now, Cyrus?
You're safe.
Welcome back. That's one of those tricky rejoins where it's not entirely clear where I start talking. But
I just want to keep you on your toes.
I know. I can tell. I like that. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Before we go to the phones, I just want to finish that story I kind of started and didn't finish for you. This is about a new pro-life bank that is going to fund Christian charities instead of Planned Parenthood, as an example. This is an article from the Daily Wire. We'll have a link to it posted so you can see it. The Christian Post reporting on this story says it was a sobering reality that prompted Vucicic, I think is how he pronounces his last name, to partner with Betsy Gray, his spiritual mother, and the executive director of the Network of Medical Women's Center, a primary care medical clinic in Santa Barbara, to found Pro-Life Bank. That's the name of the bank, Pro-Life Bank. Pro-Life Bank, he says, is a not-for-profit bank. It is a forgiving bank, as in for-giving bank. The bank will give 50% of its net profits to Judeo-Christian aligned nonprofit organizations to further the kingdom of God. Pro-Life Bank's website explains, having no limbs and not given the coddling to play the victim card, young Nick started vacuuming the floor for an allowance at age 6. He'd buy his own toys and gave money to missionaries. His father, Boris, pushed him to excel, even though it says accelerate, to excel in something that Nick could do, mathematics, for example. He became a numbers man at a young age, bringing him to the world of financial literacy at 17. He started trading options and stocks as a teenager and purchased his first home as an investment at 19 years of age. Did you buy your first home at 19 years of age, Cyrus? I'm guessing not. He obtained a Bachelor of Commerce with a double major in financial planning and investments and accounting and graduated at the age of 21. He noted that up to half of abortions in the United States are carried out by professing Christians, a reality that requires Americans to rattle the cages of the churches, he says. He also pointed out that multiple American municipalities are now sanctuary cities that do not allow abortion to occur, despite state and federal laws to the contrary. So, if you're interested, take a look at this article, courtesy of the Daily Wire, and they have links to more information about the new Pro-Life Bank, which is going to give money to charities, especially those that push back against abortion. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Kelly, listening in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Patrick. My question is not in regards to myself, it's in regards to a friend. Okay. She is not Catholic. Her fiance is a very devout Catholic. She was previously married. Her ex-husband, they were not married in the Catholic Church. I believe it was just a Protestant denomination wedding. And her ex-husband, there was a lot of domestic abuse. Okay. And they got divorced, and he was in the military, so he got sent to Fort Leavenworth.
Okay.
He now is remarried, and she is seeking to get remarried herself. She does not want anyone to have contact with her ex-husband. She still fears for her and her mother's safety. She does not know his current whereabouts. So she's kind of, I guess she reached out to the chaplain at Fort Campbell, saying, you know, we can provide all the evidence of domestic abuse and why we come from the stance of not wanting to have any contact with him. And she mentioned something about an appeal, how it was denied. So she reached out to me asking if I had any knowledge of what she could do. And I said, well, you know, let me call Patrick Madrid because he would probably know a lot better than I. And I don't want this to give her a bad taste in her mouth with the Catholic Church. And I'm sure that there's more that can be done in this very sensitive situation.
Yeah, sounds like it. A few questions to help me understand the situation a little bit better. So she wants to get remarried and the man she wants to marry is Catholic. Is that right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Hence the involvement of the Catholic Church in an annulment process.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, when you said, the other question I had is you said that something was denied. Was that a military court that denied something, or what exactly was denied to her?
What I understand is that when they went to go speak to the chaplain in regards to an annulment, they said, you know, we need to have contact information. We need all these other issues or all this other information. And that's when she said, we don't have contact with him. We don't know where he is. We don't want contact with him or his family. We don't want him knowing that I'm in the States. We don't want him knowing that I'm getting remarried because it's a safety issue. Mm-hmm. And I can only assume that the chaplain said, well, we can't go any further with your marriage until this is taken care of. Yeah.
Okay. So I think, Kelly, that is the correct answer, that the church, in order to make some kind of determination, would have to at least make an effort to get the side of the story from the husband in this case. I'm not a canon lawyer, so I can't say with certitude if there's like a an exception to that. I don't know. But I think that that's probably accurate. But it may be possible that there is some alternative, so that rather than just saying, no, we can't proceed, there may be some plan B that could be, you know, if the person has just disappeared and there's no way to know where he or she is. So I would follow up maybe with a different marriage tribunal. So that was the chaplain on the base, but maybe you can contact the diocese where, so I don't know where Fort Jackson is, what diocese it's in, but would that be Raleigh maybe? Or no, you're in South Carolina, so that would probably be Charleston. Then.
Yeah, she's in Fort Campbell, so I would assume that either she would contact the Archdiocese of Military Services or the Nashville Archdiocese. I don't know which one would be a little bit more sensitive to all the moving pieces and different aspects of the situation.
I think you're right. The Archdiocese for Military Services would be the natural place to go if they're in the military right now. So that's what I would suggest. Maybe start there and just inquire, is it possible, since we have no clue where he is, we have no way to reach him, and we also have security concerns as well, is there an alternative that we can follow to start the process? And I wouldn't be surprised if there is one. Also, for that matter, the local diocese, so that would be Charleston, they would have in their marriage tribunal people who could answer that question as well. So either way, I think they can get that information. So let's assume for a minute that the answer is yes, there is an alternative, whatever that may be. Then I would encourage her to pursue that. And keeping in mind, of course, and maybe you already know this, but nothing that happens in a marriage after the marriage, after the day that they get married, none of that is, it affect, none of it would affect the validity of the marriage at all. So it's only something that's in place at the time of the marriage. But if he was manhandling her or beating her or who knows what he was doing, my guess is that could be pretty likely established as a problem that he had before they got married. You know, that would probably be part of it. But that's my advice, Kelly.
Okay. Well, I very much appreciate that. I know she's listening right now because I didn't want to have to play repeat for her. If you can just give her some words of encouragement and I hope she keeps listening to the program because I know it has certainly helped me in my life and helped me come back to the church.
That's awesome, Kelly. Well, thank you for that, first of all. And yes, although I don't know her name, you're listening now, so you have my absolute encouragement to just pray and trust in the Lord's mercy and seek this through the Archdiocese of Military Services. I think that'd be the best place to go. Hang in there. Ask the Lord to grant you what you desire here. It sounds as though the likelihood of an annulment seems pretty good. And I'm happy for you that you have a friend in Kelly. She sounds like she's a great friend. Thanks, Kelly. Appreciate it. Let's go to Jordan, listening in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Jordan.
Hi, Patrick. There was a recent caller about 10 minutes ago who was making a point about her opinion that you can't or shouldn't discuss current events. I think that was not too productive, but I would agree that in general it is more fruitful when your show focuses on matters of faith, morals, apologetics, and theology. And I would recommend being cautious in statements about current issues because I've been listening for a while now and it does cause stress sometimes when you're making statements about the negative sides. Obviously, it's good to bring up these topics and they're important, but sometimes I believe there's a bit too much focus and it would be more fruitful to have more discussion on, again, faith, morals, apologetics, and theology.
Yeah, okay. Well, we disagree on that point, at least to the extent that what we're talking about here is not just current events, Jordan. I referenced earlier the book of Revelation, which talks about something that will happen in the future. That's definitely biblical. It's definitely part of the faith. St. Paul spent a lot of time talking about that in his epistles. So if you see the context in which I'm bringing these things up, as I did today, I think that'll help alleviate that. But certainly, if it causes you stress, then turn it off. I mean, there's no need to listen to something that causes you stress. I'm glad you listen. I really am. And I hope you keep listening. But this is a show that goes beyond just churchianity. You know, we talk about many different things on the program. And if it's not to someone's liking or if it causes their stress level to go up, I'll be the first one to say, turn the radio off. You know, it's really a very simple thing. But the show is what it is, and we cover the territory that we do, and the vast majority of people really seem to like it, at least judging from the emails and things that we get. So I guess this is one area where we may just have to agree to disagree, Jordan. Okay, well, we're out of time. Thank you, Jordan. I shouldn't say that. We're not out of time completely. We have a whole other hour to go. And we will start that hour in just a moment. So please stay right there if you want to call in and be on the program. Call me at 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149 will get you on the air. And yes, we talk about current events here.
If I thought you were my friend, I just don't think I could bear it.